Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden.
Where we continue to follow the capture and killing of Osama bin Laden now.
Those are just some of the scenes overnight as thousands of Americans gathered in celebration of Osama bin Laden's death.
Former Navy SEAL Rob O'Neill says he has thought about the mission every day since that May Day in 2011.
From multiple conversations you had with Rob O'Neill over the past year and a half, how'd you get
And you described that his head kind of exploded when you hit him.
I actually hit him three times because I shot him twice when he was standing and once on the ground.
That is the fucking American badass. Go, go,
go! We are not going for fame and we are not going for bravado. We are going for the single mom who dropped her kids off at elementary school on a Tuesday morning, and then 45 minutes later, she jumped to her death out of a skyscraper.
If you need help, hang up and then dial your operator.
I'm Rob O'Neill, and this is the Operator Podcast. Welcome back. This is the Operator Podcast, and I am your host, Robert J. O'Neill, former U.S. Navy SEAL, and I am here to talk to other operators. I love to have interviews. We've done a lot recently. They've been a hell of a lot of fun. And also because whatever you're doing, you are operating, and I want to get your opinion. Hit me up on the gram at McHooyah, M-C-H-O-O-Y-A-H, or at the Operator Podcast. That one's good, too. I'm not going to get into restrictions, but we're trying to be fair. We're trying to keep it simple. And we're trying to have some fun. I do want to hear in the comments what you think about whatever. And then, you know, hopefully that'll give us more stuff to talk about. But I do love the feedback. We've had some great interviews lately. I've been very happy with them. And it's good to, we talk about historical stuff, missions together. I've dealt with quite a few teammates in the past. It's fun to talk about the human element of what is actually going on. And it's just fun. It's good to reminisce. I mean, we even last one, we even brought up my last mission, which was an L ambush. You know, I always talk about keep it simple, master the basics. It doesn't get more basic than the L. And any time that you plan, the plan never seems to work. And if the plan is working, you're probably walking into an ambush of your own. But my last op, on my last deployment in 2012, was an L ambush. And that's one time where, you know, the only thing that went wrong is the dude's car wouldn't start. And we almost wanted to go help him start the car. We got an L waiting for you. But sure enough, you know, base maneuver, kept it simple. And like we say, you take the shot. We took the shot. That was last episode. This episode is awesome. We did have to pre-tape it because I'm interviewing Rudy Reyes again, who's obviously a combat Marine, a recon Marine, who fought in Iraq, a bunch of crazy stories. And I'm bringing in Ronnie Adkins, who's an intel guy. And the reason we had a pre-tape is because they have a show on the History Channel called The Proof Is Out There, Military Mysteries. And I actually got sneak peeks at this. It's out there now, Monday nights, like I said, on the History Channel. But they talk about mysteries of the military, assassinations, false flag stuff. And Ronnie Adkins is awesome, too. I got to meet him finally. And he's into some stuff like military deception. Fascinating show. This interview is kick-ass. I'm really excited to talk to them. It's just a lot of fun. It's episode 94 of the Operator Podcast, and it is brought to you by my Patriot Supply, because I talk about being prepared all the time, and this is very serious. Most emergencies come without warning. And when the next one comes, you won't have a second to spare on packing and preparing. You need to get ready now before an emergency strikes, and it will soon. Your supply should be within reach, ready to grab and go at a moment's notice when you don't have time to pack. Secure those supplies at this website, preparewithrob.com. Preparewithrob.com. Start with four-week emergency food kits from My Patriot Supply. Helping millions of American families prepare since 2008, My Patriot Supply are the experts in all things self-reliance. Their four-week emergency food kits offer over 2,000 calories every day. Protected by heavy-duty four-layer packaging, these kits last up to 25 years in storage. They're right there when you need it for 25 years. These delicious foods are sealed inside rugged buckets with handles designed to grab in a hurry. grab and go. So the website again is preparewithrob.com. Go to preparewithrob.com and get your food kits today as your family needs for $50 off each. This offer expires this week. You don't want to get caught unprepared. They ship fast. They will ship free in unmarked boxes. Save $50 per kit at preparewithrob.com. Preparewithrob.com. All right, welcome to the Operator Podcast. This is so exciting. I'm almost as lucky as you are for getting to listen to this or getting. I'd recommend seeing it because look at our guys here. We got Rudy Reyes again is back, second time on the Operator Podcast, and Ronnie Atkins is here. And what we're talking about is a new. I'm going to be honest, a new kick-ass show, because I am the host of this. I was given some access to this show, the name of the show is The Proof is Out There, Military Mysteries. And it's phenomenal. I'm going to let them explain it. But what I've seen so far, actually, you know what? So Ronnie Atkins is not all I know, but I'm going to let him explain it. Raised in a Navy family, joined the Army, and then ended up working with all of them. And what I love about him is he's Army intel. But here's something I wrote down that I'd never heard of, and I thought I was super secret, is military deception.
Yes, sir.
Ronnie, can you get into that a little bit for us?
Yeah, so that one, the rule behind that one, and I don't even know if this is something I'm supposed to talk about it. They give you all the left and right boundaries to what you can say while you're actually performing the art of military deception. You're not allowed to actually say you are a deception planner. I'm no longer really in that realm. And what it is there's a pipeline in the information operations or information warfare kind of discipline. For those that are in the Army, it's the IO. IO is an ASI, not necessarily like an MOS. And a common feeder for that is actually Intel, right?
Do me a favor and break that down? Because on the Operator Podcast, we have people that everyone's an operator. If you're doing anything, the dude who's a custodian, cleaning a building, the guy's taking out the trash, single mom, they might not understand IO. Can you break that down on what an MOS is?
Yeah, so military occupational specialty, it's your job, right? So everybody's a soldier, sailor, airman, marine, but then you have your specialty, right? And that could be anything from a cook to a driver to an infantryman to an intelligence analyst. You know, that's my job in the military is an all-source intelligence analyst. And what that means is it's my function and focus to take bits and pieces of intelligence from across a gamut of information that's available and compile it into a picture from a decision-making perspective. So I take that, I distill it. It can be, you know, even the smallest details that ultimately end up drastically changing how the battle space is impacted from a kinetic perspective or from an information perspective. So that's where information operations comes into play. So think, to a certain extent, PSYOP, but that's really only one part of the total information operations umbrella. Think about the cognitive change that happens when the people in Afghanistan, are one of our most recent combat zones, see a massive HIMARS strike or a massive kinetic strike. There is a psychological change that happens on the battle space from that. So those are the types of things beyond just your typical PSYOP leaflets and things that we can plan for. How do we make change in the cognitive space as an information operations guy? A deeper discipline of that is deception, right? How do we get the enemy to turn left when we know that he wants to turn right? There's all kinds of capabilities that we have that are available to us for that. Really, the sky is the limit. It's about a year-long pipeline to be able to do what to be assigned to the mission that I had. Everything from electronic warfare integrators courses to cyber courses. I actually have a quite in-depth cyber background on the civilian side, to the military deception course. So there is a selection process for that. It's a very intellectual heavy type selection process. Not like what you might be familiar with from maybe like an OTC, something along those lines. But it's a lot about how do you compile these different capabilities to shape the battle space from an information perspective. That's what I did in my second deployment.
Now, so if I'm not mistaken, the HIMARS, they blast up into the stratosphere and come down on people who are targets who aren't necessarily used to Because you don't even know where it's coming from. Just shit happens. And it's your job to like warn them before it happens or explain what happened later and like tell the Taliban it was something else. Like, because I used to tell some people in those valleys, yeah, there are dragons up there and we'll slay it if you stop putting bombs on.
So you know, it's funny that you say that. You're starting to talk a little bit about, you know, enlisting the supernatural to, I don't know, cause change in the cognitive space. Those are things that we can do. Yourself as a, you know, a member of a strike force, we can work. We, and I have worked alongside you and your brethren to place talking points, if you will, right? Or perhaps leave behinds, leaflets, things along those lines. So we can use many different capabilities to paint a picture. And each one of those different capabilities and actions that takes place are what we call observables, right? So a HIMARS strike might just be that we want to hit the side of a mountain really hard with a really big explosion so that we create an observable that supports and helps us achieve an overarching desired effect. That's how information operations works and ultimately how deception can work.
I don't want to jump around, but wasn't there a thing where something, it was one of the wars I know you covered. I'd seriously just binge watched every one of the episodes. There was something where someone convinced someone that they were like possessed by evil spirits, right?
Yeah, that was Vietnam, Operation Wandering Soul, and that's in episode 2. So Wandering Soul is, that goes all the way back to, I wouldn't say the early days, because in episode 1, we cover some of the original deception plans. So we're talking about the Ghost Army and the 23rd Special Troops. Yep. I love talking about this stuff. This is like my lane. So the 23rd Special Troops, starting in a timeline order, they had inflatable tanks. And they deceived Germany into believing that we had capabilities where we didn't, which kind of caused a second guess, right? So if the enemy's thinking to themselves, you know, I'm going to push, you know, major combined arms offensive here, but we have the perception of a stronger force than we actually do, it might cause them to second guess that. And that's exactly what happened. And we covered that in episode 1. Episode 2 is Wandering Soul. We played off of the superstitions of the North Vietnamese.
Okay.
They were very superstitious people. There's a tape out there called Ghost Tape 10. You can kind of watch more about that and dive into Operation Wandering Soul and some of the capabilities that we used. Ultimately the desired effect in this instance was to get the enemy to surrender or to degrade their morale.
Right.
Those were the desired effects of that operation.
Now, the World War II piece, we're talking, if I'm not mistaken, General Patton was kicking so much ass, he got away from the supplies, and the Germans wanted a counterattack, and then this, like, deception dudes came out with inflatable tanks that are like beach balls, and they look, right?
Think about the capabilities at the time from an... Imagine you're from an ISR perspective and a surveillance, yeah. You know, a plane flying over the battle space in World War II. You have very rudimentary cameras, a very rudimentary capability to discern what's happening, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 feet below. So you don't need much from a deception perspective to change, once again, the cognitive space of your adversary, in this case, Germany. So playing on that, We rolled out everything from inflatable tanks to sonic deception. So audio, we played audio that made it sound like there were more tanks, more people were there than there were. These are like the original guys that really set the foundations for what would become PSYOP or military information intelligence support operations, which, again, that is a very specific discipline. IO, my job is actually kind of an umbrella over top of that. Again, I am not relegated to, was not, excuse me, relegated to just PSYOP capabilities.
As far as we know.
but I can also use kinetic strikes. I can also use cyber effects. I can use electronic warfare effects to condition the battle space ahead of time, right? So IO was something that I was really privileged to find a path to get selected for. Yeah. It was mentally grueling, and then we ended up attaching with the task force in Afghanistan, which, I mean, that's the pinnacle of my military career. I'm an intel guy and a reservist at that. Getting the opportunity to do that was just the cherry on top of everything.
Yeah, that's incredible. And actually, that's a good segue, because as far as tactics, so I'm a big believer in keep it simple, master the basics. I think Rudy mentioned, being a martial artist, that Sun Tzu said something along the lines of, when you're weak, look strong. When you're strong, look weak. What was that one?
Absolutely. When you have strength, be perceived as being weak. And when you are weak, show strength. You know what? Just hearing Ronnie talk, by the way, do you see, Rob, why we make such a great team?
Of course.
This
of course.
Guy is awesome in quantum in the mind. And you and I were more strategic, tactical. Tactical mm-hmm. on the deck. And we had brothers like Ronnie
yes.
and our massive military supporting us in everything we did. No wonder we're still alive to tell the tale.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I was thinking that as I was watching the show, that you're the tactical guy, but Ronnie's the guy behind it. I understand, Rudy, with you being a Marine, a recon Marine, and fighting in combat and whatnot, but it almost reminded me of some of the bigger missions I was on where people like Ronnie, men and women, were explaining to me how we found this, how you're going to, and what we're going to do after, to the point where, look, I just trust you. You're filling my brain full of stuff that
yeah,
I don't think
for sure.
I can't comprehend it. You say someone's there, I'll kick that door in and my buddies are going with me.
That's right. That's right. We'll leave the CIA and the NSA career to Ronnie. You and I will have fun on podcasts and raise kids and work out. It's incredible, brother. The show is rad, isn't it? We have not seen it. I love it too. We have not seen it until just now. History Channel has been very close to the vest. And at first we didn't understand the strategy, but I'll tell you what, it's made Ronnie and I very happy seeing our work and the whole team of experts who are Green Berets, pilots. We have historians all backing our play and building the target, if you will, for Ronnie and I to lead point. It's been rock and roll from the beginning, and also like a real military operation, breakneck pace. Ronnie and I worked, I think, a week, maybe 10 days.
It was 2 weeks full, but in studio, it was about 10 days worth of film. Yeah.
And some of those days were 15-hour days and deep, deep dives with all. I mean, we had a command center off camera. We had a command center running stuff, and Ronnie and I are giving pieces to camera, and then how we want to word it or new information is coming out as we're shooting, and we've got to change our dialogue right there. It's incredible, and I'm glad we're getting the support. And thank you, Rob, for bringing us on.
It's my honor just simply because I got to see pretty much all the episodes, and I found myself, I'm not even kidding, like, okay, I'm going to watch and see. I've got a computer out with a document. I'm taking notes in case I can't type as fast. No, and I'm legit learning. Just the way that it's everything from, yes, here's what happened, or yes, this is what we let you know, but here's what actually happened on the way to there. And in order to, you know what it reminded me of, and we'll get into the helicopters in a minute, when our stealth helicopter crashed in the front yard of Bin Laden's house, Admiral McRaven was smart enough to realize that the White House freaking out right now is not going to help the guys on the ground. So he responded with, there's obviously been a contingency, but don't worry, my guys can handle it. It's hard stop. Like, that's it. Like, fuck it. They don't need to freak out. It's kind of like one of the episodes, they were talking about the runs before D-Day, because you got to do practice runs for the invasion. So you're in England, you're going to go to France. Everyone's trying to figure out where. The Allies are looking for similar land. They know they're going to Normandy, but they want to tell the Germans they're doing whatever. And then they're doing practice runs. And it wasn't U-boats. It was E-boats that most people don't know about. Can you tell the backstory, or do you want people to watch it, or how much can I say?
I think this was one of the ones that I really researched even further beyond the show. I'm a war history nerd. Like, that's just what I do. It's a function of my career and where I'm hoping to continue my career, right? So what we were doing is we were effectively practicing for what would be the largest land invasion that had ever occurred, right? Now, the risk to that, if you do that poorly and you don't have some level of counterintelligence, denial, deception, is there's a risk of blowing that entire operation if you're caught practicing for it. Well, what ended up happening is some Germans sunk some of our practice boats. Now, exactly what, you know, kind of transpired and how that happened, I'm gonna ask people to watch the show, because I think the show does a really good job of kind of describing, like you said, the path to understand the mystery, at least, because some of these we really still can't answer. You know, we can't answer every question, but some of them we do. This is one that I think we can come to a pretty solid conclusion on. But I think people need to watch it to better understand, you know, exactly what transpired there. There was a major, major risk of all of the Normandy invasion failing based on just one day that things went south.
Well, and you got to figure, too, if that word, like they say, that literally loose lips sink ships, if that word gets back to the United States, which they know they have to do something because they've been fighting in Africa and Italy and obviously Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. But what if the people freak out? You got to keep that down. And then I'm not going to ruin anything, but at what point does the training start? Like I mentioned earlier, master the basics. There are guys, we don't know how many sailors didn't put their life vests on the right way because they hadn't, you know, we're just training. So why do I need to train? And one of the jokes that I've heard is train like a train, but you know, it can hit you on a random Thursday, right?
Yeah, that's right. Rob, if I could jump in real quick Ronnie, think of World War II. Mm-hmm. Now think of UDT being brand new and experimental. Yeah. Think a paratrooper being brand new and experimental. Machine guns had only existed for what, 35 years, 30 years? So much brand new technology. And look, brother, on the tactical side, how many things went wrong, Rob, on our training ops?
Yes.
That we had to figure out and un-F, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Before we went hot. Now imagine when all the chips are down. This is for world domination.
Yeah.
And I can't help, as an American fighting man, absolutely feel the love, the passion, and the respect for those that went before me. It just blows me away.
Oh, no doubt. Especially considering a lot of those dudes from the airborne divisions, they're only there because someone recruiter told them, this is like $20 a month extra.
How
serious are you?
The pro pays, Rob. By the way, you and I, and with freaking Ronnie supporting us at the high level, we toppled regimes and did expeditionary warfare for about $70,000 a year, and I thought I was making fat money. I said jump. I said dive. I said demo. I said danger. I said, damn, I'm making the money.
Oh, yeah, it's on. Now, they introduced save pay. It's like, this is super duper, man. I can't wait to buy my house in the Hamptons.
Yeah. You know what? What we did is that we put a little money away for the child, or we got ahead on our mortgage. That's what we did, and we thought we were doing it great. But that's another thing that, again, we love, brother.
It's amazing. It's amazing too that, you know, dudes are scraping by to pay the mortgage and all of a sudden they're being asked to jump in somewhere from then till now. And but you know, you talk about all of the stuff that happens behind the scenes, like Ronnie's doing. Talk about the silent warriors that don't get any credit.
Ronnie speaks to that a lot, Ronnie. Why don't you talk a little bit about that, brother?
Well, you know, that takes you back to, and we covered, this would have been episode one, right? That's one of the things that I love about this show. These are stories that more people need to know about and they need to hear about, right?
Yes.
Because we're talking about, you know, people, the only Gulf War pilot that was shot down in the Gulf War by enemy fire, and what exactly happened to him, or at least as far as we could tell, what happened to him, Lieutenant Commander Scott Spiker.
Scott Spiker, right?
We're talking in tonight's episode, while we're filming this, there's an episode coming out tonight that talks about Major Sam Logan shot down over Korea and what happened with him. In taking that even a step further, not just missing pilots, but unsung heroes, right, of the 23rd Special Troops. You know, again, they're setting conditions in the battle space to deceive Hitler to the point to where even after the Normandy invasion started happening, he still so believed that we were going to land at where we made him believe we were going to land, right, that he refused to reallocate combat power to Normandy. Like these are folks that, you know, up until very recently, the 23rd was actually just very recently recognized, that have gone for the majority of history since their actions, gone very unsung. And I love the fact that they gave Rudy and myself, excuse me, and the experts, which Rudy touched on, this is really their show, if I'm being honest with you. Like, these are nuanced, context-heavy experts that really know their stuff. It's really their show. But we're so privileged to be given the opportunity to talk about, like Rudy said, those that came before us.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned Scott Spiker, who was shot. Now, they kept changing his status because they said he was shot down by an Iraqi jet. I personally am not buying that. He's flying an F-18. Those are top of the line. I don't think an Iraqi jet. I don't know. But then you find the body's not recovered. The Bedouins, I'm not ruining the story, but remains are eventually found. But what actually happened? And just from some of the imagery, just the way it goes on. Again, do you want to touch on that? People need to watch the show.
You're touching on everything. I mean, you're touching on exactly the problem. We're trying to take this question mark, right? Well, for each of these individual sections and stories and segments, there are six segments per episode. And first of all, trying to distill some of these down into individual segments over an hour long program, which ends up being like 40 something minutes, mm-hmm. something along those lines. Trying to distill that down to at least give you some contextual understanding of the situation surrounding it is extremely difficult. But when it comes to like Scott Spiker's story, there is so much misinformation that's out there. There are so many questions about initials that were carved into Iraqi prisons and stuff that are his initials.
Because his name, Michael Scott Spiker, the MSS, right. People called him Scott Spiker, but it was Michael. And this MSS in between all this Arabic shit, not ruining anything. I'm a history buff myself, and this watching this show will not only have you watch the same show again, it'll inspire you to look up the same stuff that you're looking up. Like, it's fascinating.
That's the goal. That is ultimately the goal, is to see this stuff, on television, on the History Channel, preferably when it's live, right? Watch it and then really get the desire to, again, go back and research those that came before us. These are real stories, not to derail or detract from. I would personally love to learn more about Sasquatch, but we're talking about sacrifice in this. Eventually, I want to cover the giants of Afghanistan. I'm just saying that's a thing that I think is right up our lane. But the stories that we covered in this first foray of episodes, this is real sacrifice. These are real people. These are assassination attempts, we think. We're not really, you might need to watch the episode to dive further into that.
Uh-huh.
But I love that it's real. And I love that there's grit. I love that there's footage that we're using. Tonight, there's going to be massive explosions of battleships in the middle of the sea. Why that happened, you'll have to watch the episode.
What's funny too, and I'm not, again, this is probably way offline, but even bringing up Sasquatch, it gets into the mystery of were the Nazis and the Russians trying to develop a super soldier, and what happened to those hikers that you run into a camp where the shit's ripped and the tongue's out. And that's, if you guys are ever researching that and you need someone to go with you, count me out. Just saying, that's some scary shit. And,
Rob and Ronnie, I grew up with comic books, and I collect comic books for my whole life. And Hellboy, the character Hellboy that they've made movies and stuff about, the comics by Mike Mignola are absolutely amazing. And most of his stories go into the Nazis, and this is a true program they had, an occult program.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The Nazis were trying to raise the power of Cthulhu and these dark outer gods. They were willing to make a deal with the devil to win the war and rule the world. There's so much. Well, because we're all military men, we know everything's on the line on every operation. Uh-huh. And the battles that we go through with compartmentalizing fear, mm-hmm. believing in something bigger than ourselves, and making peace with our death. Because these happen when we're out there in this very, very intense and kinetic and sometimes foreign, almost spiritually foreign place. I think that's timeless. I think that's been that way for men and sometimes women that fight in war from the very beginning. And I think our program, Military Mysteries, really does an an honorable job of addressing the human story to all of this pantheon of mystery.
No, that's incredible, too. You say that, you know, selling your soul for victory, you can see that, too. And like you were saying, like Ronnie was saying with Vietnam, you tell them we're possessed by evil spirits or whatever, get in their mind that way. I mean, you can, and psychological warfare, a lot of people don't consider that. I mean, you get in someone's head. It's almost like going through a selection course where once you think about quitting, it's over. You're done. Was that the same thing in combat?
You know what, brother? How about this, Rob? Those early days of expeditionary warfare in Afghanistan and Pakistan in 01 for me, and then the invasion of Iraq in 03, and then looking for the freaking uranium and all of that, and these strange things that were happening. When I went back to Fallujah, and I'd never even heard of Fallujah, brother, I'd already done two heavy combat tours. I was going to be an instructor. It's finally going to spend some time with my family and teach and create new recon marines. And then we heard about this place called Fallujah.
Yeah.
And the commander brought me into the head shed, flat tops, me and a couple of senior team leaders, and spun us up quick. In 3 weeks, we had teams together. In 6 weeks, we were deploying back there. My brother platoon, after I had been on a long range reconnaissance mission and on exfil by CAT teams, you know, combined anti-armored Humvees with tow missiles and 50 cals and 119s. They gave us a hot extract after my fourth day doing a sniper mission and recon mission. And we were vegged up in the canals. It was March. It was March. So it was still, you know, it was about 60, 70 degrees, and there's vegetation everywhere on the Euphrates. And we come out and we freaking load up, freaking throw out the smoke, freaking ITG, get in, exfil, and then we're hit. But right before we're hit, brother, and you remember in Iraq, the roads were up high, and it was like a waffle in the depressions or the big fields. And then up on the top ridges are the roads. So you're always skylined, and they're too steep to take your Humvee off, right? You might roll a thing. Right before, and we didn't have any roofs, or we had half armored doors, but our armor was the heavy guns and us was the armor.
Jeez.
On my right flank, I saw two figures, one a child and one in black, which must have been a woman, running. So then I look to my left, and then I hear a boom, and the RPG shoots right behind my head and in front of the gooseneck of my gunner's 50 cal and hits there, boom. But it's all like slow motion. And I call contact left. We chop our way through there. My brother platoon goes right back in to get into the fight. They're engaged with machine guns, and then one of the vehicles is hit by an RPG. They dismount, they aggress through, but they're seeing tricolored deserts and helmets and some M4s as well as AKs moving towards them. They think there's a deconfliction issue. No. Is it army? No, it was the enemy that had taken all this equipment and weapons from the Jessica Lynch. Brother. Ooh. And so that half a second killed one of our brothers, wounded 8. Now we ended up chopping through 35, but still they got a kill and they wounded 8 of us because of that one piece of deception.
That's incredible too. And at that, you see it in slow motion, but that's happening fast. Cause that one piece of deception, they knew they would do. I mean, okay. What's going to happen now? And then there's going to be another fight. What happens with all the night vision we left for the Taliban and Al-Qaeda? You know, that's making its way through.
Exactly, brother. I mean, you know what? Why don't us military men and women, why are we not more connected to government and governing so that we can empower our citizens and our future military to better fight and understand the battle space? Because it seems that we're just not learning our lessons since Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. I mean, not to get too far off the show, but just speaking of the way war changes, and Ronnie, you might know more, but you mentioned cyber. Fifth generation warfare is stuff like algorithms and TikTok. I mean, how do we defend against that? Because I think what China wanted, to do was divide each other based on that algorithm, get celebrities to pump it, and all of a sudden we hate each other. We're the only country to hate ourselves. What are your thoughts on that kind of fifth generation war if we go off on a tangent?
Yeah, you're talking about like the intersection of, you know, the cyber domain, which is its own war fighting domain. For me, something that I, the way I like to frame it, and I spent, 12 years in both, as I mentioned, I'm a reservist. So my civilian career has progressed alongside my military career. And, my military career is really only just one part. There's a saying that I like to that I have, I think it's great that you used to be great, but what about today?
Wow. I'm that's totally really stealing that.
That's really that's awesome, just the beginning for me. My military career is something that I did. It's something that I took a lot of value from. But there are so many other things that I did and that I want to do as I move forward. Cyber was actually the bulk of my civilian career alongside. And I spent 12 years in the intelligence community doing both cyber intelligence and cyber defense. So at one point in time, I was a cyber counterintelligence analyst. And my job was effectively identifying foreign intelligence entities that were targeting the United States from an espionage perspective. Mm-hmm. Something that's important for people to know, and I hold a CISSP, Certified Information System Security Professional, and a Certified Ethical Hacker certification. Something for people to know is there is the Cold War didn't stop. It just changed domains, mm-hmm. right? It is espionage is actively happening in the cyber domain, but the difference in the cyber domain is to transition from espionage to attack is solely intent. You do not need to have any additional level of access. I'll give you an example, Rob. If I were to compromise your router right now, your home wireless router, from an espionage perspective, I have a certain level of access to that router. If I want to attack you, take you offline, or shut down your router, remove it from being able to work again, I don't need any additional access. I just need to change my intent. So when you see critical system one compromised by a foreign intelligence entity, critical system two compromised by a foreign intelligence entity, understand that the access that they have from an espionage perspective is the only access they need to shut it down as well. There have been cyber chiefs that have left very high positions in the United States solely because of the threat in the cyber domain. But what you're starting to speak about is the use of the cyber domain almost as a dissemination mechanism for propagating propaganda, right? Wow. Or for propagating narratives or messaging. And the goal is that they put it out here and then it gets shared by a mutual friend online. It gets shared once more. And ultimately, just the simple discussion of that tweet or that Facebook post ends up at the water cooler. Then it's a seed, and that seed then grows. That was ultimately the challenge behind TikTok, right? Now, not to get into the back and forth of whether or not we should have access to TikTok. Everybody is going to have their own perspectives on that. Ultimately, it is, in social media writ large, regardless of which platform, is being used to propagate foreign intelligence entity messaging. That is something that has been going on. There's a gentleman from Russia. I don't recall his name, but he talked about the use of our institutions by Russia.
Yes, brother, that was in the 70s. To
divide us. That is only more effective now with the access that social media has to the masses. This is unprecedented, the ability for foreign intelligence agent number one to reach Joe Smith the plumber.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
There's so much depth.
Going back to Sun Tzu, it's the whole start the fire and watch it burn from across the river. Let them fight each other and we'll stay fresh. And when they're tired, we hit them with fresh troops. And that's exactly what's happening right now. And it's so weird that we could tell our youth about this, but they're too busy looking at fucking TikTok.
You're so right, brother. Check this. Remember, Sun Tzu's biggest precept was win the war without pulling out your sword. And that's happening now. Let me get onto the positive side because that's what they've been doing so far.
I'm starting to get.
But this is the good news. This is the good news. Sorry. And no, Bonnie, it's awesome because this is correct information. Look what you, Rob, Ronnie, myself, and people like us, by doing great programming and sharing knowledge with passion about the good things about Western society, about what freedom really is about and what it's built on. Brother, that passionate message, nothing in Soviet, in a former Soviet Union or communist China or socialist anything, it cannot compare with that kind of passion. And that's what we're in the fight. We're in the fight for our children, for our veterans. We're in the fight for our country to remember how good we are, how good we are and what we stand for. And we're doing something about it. And thank you for bringing us on for that reason.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, what I notice every day, too, is I can sit here and look at social media and get pissed off. But when I go outside, that's reality. The social media is just not real. You can't get your mind wrapped into it because that is, I mean, yes, social media is fun, but the people trying to do you harm are doing it in your mind. Most of your problems are in your mind.
Well said, brother. Well said. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't have a car. Jade's got the big truck and all this, you know what I mean? And she clowns me on my driving all the time because I'm used to driving Humvees and just, you know, there's traffic rules. So I walk Rob, I'm the only one that walks in this nice suburb in Dallas. I never see anybody walking anywhere, and I just walk and I feel the sun and I look at the clouds,
dude,
and my feet on the deck. It's awesome, brother.
Yes.
It's awesome. Yes. And you know what I'm saying? You're up in Montana, right?
Well, I'm from Montana, but what I did after the military and I still do now is I golf. I suck, but I do it by myself because I'm outside. And I can afford to lose, you know, 36 balls on 18 holes. I don't care. But just being out there, the wind, just, you know, if there's a river nearby, shit like that.
I'm with you.
And I walk too. Jess has the car. I don't.
Yeah, I'm with you, brother. And, you know, Ronnie and I were just at Wes Whitlock's in Austin with Matt DiMeo, another Marine Corps brother. And Wes has got an outdoor hot box of a freaking gym, right? Mm-hmm. Which is gut check kettlebells and dumbbells and a...
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Speaking huge mace that really is a weapon and a rudimentary lat pull. And bro, we got down and sweating and listening to some AC/DC and some Overkill and just getting into it. And it brings me back to the essence, man. And I never want to lose that. I never want to lose that.
No. Yeah. That's so important too. And it's good that again, I can't imagine a weight room outside in Texas.
No, it's hot.
It was awesome. But it was awesome. I loved it.
I'm fanboying the shit out of this guy. There was something else I saw that because intelligence is something, counterintelligence is awesome, but then you get into false flag shit. There's an episode, not going to ruin it. The Nazis were involved, and they're still probably around trying to get Greenland because of the way the weather works from left to right. So that's obviously why that in Antarctica, and you can plant flags anywhere up to the point of a moon base, which whatever. And I know we just funded a moon train, not buying it, but you know, that was fascinating. if you want to get into that, but what caught me was, some of the assassinations because the Palestinian Mossad thing going on now, and Mossad, I think, is probably the best assassins there are. But how good are the Palestinian enemy that want to maybe, like, okay, only intel guys could tell from a certain angle on the cameras that these guys are spies because, you know, the tennis shit or whatever, and he's not playing tennis. But are they that bad with that wig, or is it someone else proving to only intel guys I'm this bad, so you think someone else did it, so I didn't do it? Like, shit.
I'm okay. With you, brother. It's a Seinfeld episode. It's freaking, it's a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, except there's assassinations and bad wigs. Yeah, I hear you, brother. And it's interesting. Ronnie, when did that mission go down? Was that about 10 years ago?
Yeah, it's around about 10 years ago. And it's just, you know, you talk about the capabilities of Hamas, right? You have to think about the way Hamas would operate. And you almost have to do so from a very objective perspective, right? Mossad, they have been surrounded forever, right? So they almost from a state of necessity have had to really hone their skills. Hamas, from another perspective, they really have to take advantage of limited resources, right? So they're not going to have the same backing that their adversaries are going to. They're going to have to take higher risks. There's going to be, looking at it again from a Mossad perspective, there's going to be probably a little bit of, from a risk perspective, the ability to take on more risk for Mossad. You know,
I'm on your side with that, Ronnie. I think it was a
that one is such a back and forth, because you can really see how the arguments from both perspectives on that specific story. And that would have been episode one, if I'm not mistaken. So
I think it is.
If folks are in,
go back and watch. No, because
go ahead.
No, I just said I had to watch that segment twice. Yeah. Just today, because of just the way it's explained that, well, because a dummy like me is like, well, that's obvious because you just explained it. Or wait, was it obvious because someone smarter than me could have seen? Wait a minute. Who? What the shit?
it makes you second guess it. Because too many people, have this idea that there's always two sides to the coin. In fact, there sometimes aren't two sides to the coin. Sometimes there is just the objective truth, right? With a situation like this, what you really have to rely on is historical context. And that's one of the things that we had to lean on for that story. Mossad has kind of a history of taking action wherever they deem it necessary, ultimately in the pursuit of, you know, what they perceive to be a threat towards their nation. Yes. Mm-hmm. So when you add that historical context and you add that perspective, I think you can begin to almost come to not necessarily an educated guess, but a probability. But it's still that question lingers. You know, is there still the possibility? Yeah.
You know, Rob.
And that's one. I love that story.
Oh, it's incredible.
Rob and Ronnie. I've always thought it's Mossad and it was a target of opportunity until this conversation right now. Because then I'm thinking this, Ronnie. You know, Arabic culture. And, you know, Arabs and Arabic culture have a sixth sense of knowing other Arabs or Muslims, but specifically Arabs. And Arabic people could definitely have access and maybe even be looked the other way at a bad rig. And I've always thought it was Mossad because of the brazenness and the history. But until this conversation now, I also could imagine, but then again, it could have been farmed out. I don't know.
Yeah. It's just, this is why the intel side is so important, and you really need to know what you're getting into. Because, like, two things that bothered me. One is TV shows that are fiction, where like a Delta dude goes to a spot and he speaks in Arabic and they act like it's like a dude from Boston telling a guy from Birmingham, I'm from Birmingham. Bullshit, you're from Boston with that Red Sox. You're going to fucking know. That bothers me too. But then when there was in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, there was a major unit that was going to Iraq. They switched to Afghanistan and the brief still said Iraq. And they said, well, we're going to Afghanistan. And he goes, the boss is like, Iraq, Afghanistan. What's the difference? What's the difference? I mean, even when you're in Afghanistan, like you said, with Arabs in Afghanistan are foreign fighters to the Pashtuns.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's so much out there that needs to be considered. I mean, that's why I'm happy guys like Ronnie are there to explain it to guys like me and Ruby.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. No kidding, brother.
Yeah, that was a major, by my second deployment, it was a major effort of ours to really help the Taliban understand that these foreign fighters, Al-Qaeda, were uh-huh. in your country to mooch off of you, to leech off of you. You know, these are not part of your tribe, your tribesmen. This is not somebody that should have free and free access to your homes. That was a major effort for us by then. Now, on the other side of that coin, the major effort was also to make them not be here anymore because they kept shooting at, you know, innocent people. So it's kind of a two sides to that coin. Yes, let's get the locals to understand these are not your friends. There.
Well, that's we had to use the same stuff in Iraq, out western Iraq during 2007 when I was over there, one of my deployments, because Al-Qaeda is Sunni and a lot of the locals there are Sunni. And so Al-Qaeda can go into their house because of this, but we have to let them know these are the bad guys, these are the good guys. And you just catch them, you catch a kid in a lie. Who are the four guys you know? Who are the three guys you don't? There's your bad guy. Like, just simple but complex. And you just going in there as a big ugly American, not understanding the culture, you're gonna lose. And just it's just there's so much to it. And I'm just like, again, I'm so happy that you know, the people can comprehend that. One thing I want to mention too, that I'm pretty sure that I got in trouble for on live television the other night. They were talking about the funding for Hamas and the Palestinians. I said, well, talk to the three billionaires that are running Hamas over in Qatar, and they're up there in high rises smoking cigars with Russian hookers, which is true, but you can't say that, I guess.
But brother, you're exactly right. First of all, how about some of my Kurdish brothers that fought side by side with me in northern Iraq and in Fallujah, and my Kurdish brothers who were refugees from the Gulf War, came to D.C. with the clothes on their back, some of them wounded, built businesses, became American citizens, married American wives, have kids in private school, and then went back to Iraq to be interpreters because they believe in America. They believe in America.
That? Tell me that's not a lesson. You know, they believe in America.
They believe in America, brother. And how about when the Kurds get together and they're making kebab and they're slicing fresh onion and tomato and it's Christians, Jews, it's because we're all fighting together. A simple way of looking at something without understanding nuance, you're a fool. And in combat, fools get people killed.
That's brilliant. Couldn't have been said. Okay, I want to get into two more. The show's fascinating, and I'm not going to say this, but if you can just give a teaser, and this episode may have aired. Like I said, I binge watched this. I got my notes all over the place. But can you explain how the Korean soldier ended up being taken prisoner by the Allied forces at D-Day?
Do you want people to tell what episode
that is?
So you're actually teasing a part of, if I'm not mistaken, the episode that's going to air in about the time we're recording.
We are pre-taping this, so I don't want to ruin it.
No, so what I'm saying is while we're talking about recording, that's probably going to be one that airs.
Okay, we're not going to ruin it, but I mean, if I didn't just say how the hell did he get from here to there from two different wars, fascinating.
That was when you see, that's actually something really interesting, because when you take such a complex situation like that and you look at it at face value, you end up coming to a conclusion because it's the easiest thing for you to do. The evidence, if you will, is right there in front of you, which is a photo in this specific instance.
Yes.
But when you start to peel away the context and the nuance, right, and dive down into, as the wise man Shrek said, the different layers of the onion, you start to better understand that there's so much more than just what you see from a news headline or a photo. There's so much more context and nuance to everything in this world, especially just going back to an earlier conversation on social media. That's why, this is where I'm going with this, that's why I'm so proud of this show, because the experts that we brought in, Rudy and I are both
we can speak to a broad range of topics. That's my job, actually, in the military, is to speak across many different topics at kind of a surface level and then be able to distill that. But the experts that we have, these are folks that are very nuanced in their careers. These are historians. These are weapons experts. These are, you know, Green Berets. These are people that are, you know, progressed as professionals in what we're asking them to analyze here. That's why I say this is this show is about them. Rudy and our appointment. That's it.
That is a creepy picture of that Korean dude. You know, I mean, speaking of dudes that do their research, I don't know if you know this. This is Hollywood. In Saving Private Ryan on D-Day, when they finally take the bunkers and those two soldiers come out, they put their hands up and they execute them. You know what they were saying in Czech was, "We're not Germans," or some shit like that.
Wow!
Look, I watched for supper.
Yeah, I watched
for supper. That's not what they said. Yeah.
But I mean, when you talk, because like there were prisoners that could, you know, we'll just fight for you in a supply effort or whatever. And the Germans did that. But then one of your episodes gets into that a sub that was sunk. And why was it there? But it might have been because the Russians want to hit Pearl Harbor and blame it on China. Like, what the fuck is going on out there?
K-129. Yeah. K-129. Funny story about K-129. That was Rudy and I linked up when so history was going through the process. He's laughing already. This is a fun story. Well, history originally reached out to me and said, "Hey, would you like to come on and be an expert?" And yeah, sure, absolutely. A few months later, they said, "Hey, would you consider hosting this show?" And my wife and I are like mid-pack for our 10-year anniversary cruise. No. We never did a honeymoon. We just didn't have the money to do a honeymoon. So we're packing for this 10-year anniversary cruise. And I'm like, "When do you want to do this?" And they said, like next Wednesday or Thursday, whenever exactly it was, I was going to be on the cruise.
Oh my
God. So here we are that day. And I am, you know, two drinks in because I'm on.
Yeah,
a cruise.
Brother.
And I've got this Hawaiian
Tommy Bahama.
Shirt on
Is it Tommy Bahama? Right. Is it Tommy Bahama?
The top buttons are undone and I've got the hamburger meat hanging out and I'm sunburnt. And I get on with Rudy and we just start hitting it. And K-129 was the thing that we had researched. Yeah. And they kind of wanted to see the perspectives. Again, you mentioned this earlier, a strategic intel perspective, maybe a perspective from a tactical, you know, realm. Come at it from those two angles and see where we end up in the middle. And dude, Rudy, we must have talked for like an hour and a half. We're arguing about this
job.
K-129.
Yeah, Ronnie got the job. They said Ronnie's our man, and I couldn't.
I did it in the middle of the ocean, open ocean, man. It was wild, dude.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy. Okay, one more I got to touch on from personal experience. There's something about a helicopter.
Yes.
Going into Pakistan. Do you want to?
well, funny that you mentioned that, Rob. Ronnie and I are doing our read-throughs. We did a week of rehearsal, and deep dives. And by the way, the rehearsals were nothing like when we were actually, it's just like a combat operation. You do your rehearsals. And then the stuff starts getting kinetic and it's on, right? And the Bin Laden raid came up. I said, and there's some questions coming up from our writers who are really solid cats that really believe in what we're doing. And I said, you know what? Let me text Rob O'Neill. And Ronnie and I had only known each other a little bit virtually and now we're working together. And everybody was just like, "Really?" I said, "Yeah." So remember, I said, "Dog."
I remember that, yeah. And,
you know, anyway, so go ahead, Ronnie. Go ahead.
I was sneaking peeks at his phone, you know, to see what Rob was saying. Kind of looking over his shoulder like I'm cheating on a math test or something, you know? Weird.
And brother, you know what? Of course, we saw a variation of your story on Zero Dark 30.
Yeah.
More importantly, do you know what? This is kind of wild. After you did that raid the next day, or maybe it was 2 days after when President Obama put the word out, I was living in New York City and Fox came and talked to me about it.
Oh, cool.
And I said, "Well, why don't they have their body?" And I said, "Well, I didn't make that call. Maybe if the president of the United States is putting out the message, then it's important, whether no matter what, it's important. And do I believe these brothers can do the job? Well, they do the job. They do the job. There's 5 missions, 10 missions that are even heavier than this that you don't know nothing about. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's just so wild how full circle it goes when we stay in the game long enough.
Yeah, true.
And you know, I mean, it's just such, it's such a beautiful world in our veteran community too, because yes. we have so much more access to each other than we did in the 80s and in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. You know, Tulsi Gabbard's been really, really freaking motivating and close to me for some time. And Ronnie and I spent some time with her in New York. And
yeah,
I love
incredible.
Seeing us all rise. I love seeing us all rise, Rob. And that's what really, really, really fires me up. We got young guys like Ronnie that are coming up. And we've got warriors and people that believe in America and believe in freedom that are coming up. And I feel... it's my responsibility as a senior guy to give yes. them the opportunity to tell these stories, because nobody can do it better than us.
I agree with you too. And I think it's important for history, as long as we're not giving up tactics or putting anyone in danger, future generations need to know what happened and what we can do. And with a lot of these veterans too, because you want to stay away from the negativity. If we decide to work together, we can take over the world again.
I agree, bro. I agree. Look at us, Army Dog, freaking SEAL, freaking Recon Marine. In the old days, Rob, you come from the 90s like myself. Joint was the future. Joint is not future anymore. It is now.
Oh, yeah, it
Joint
is.
Joint is now, bro.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So, okay, that's the show. I mean, the proof is out
okay,
there.
Military mysteries.
But no, we got to talk about something that Ronnie's not going to brag about it, but he's hit a further shot than I have. And you're a sniper, Rudy. I was a sniper.
Yeah,
Ronnie,
yeah.
What did you do today? You were just telling about this offline. I got to get this story.
So here's the thing.
You can brag. We do it all the time.
I didn't grow up. I grew up a shooter of, you know, basic bolt actions and lever actions. You know, I chose the intelligence path in the military, which gave me a ton of skills. But one of the things that, you know, isn't necessarily a skill that you take away from that is precision shooting. And yes. I decided to take up precision shooting as a hobby. I have quite a few, you know, Rudy and I are both into martial arts. I box, you know, Rudy's a little bit more holistic with his, but precision shooting for me is a thinking man's game.
Oh, yeah.
It is finding a solution across almost an innumerable amount of variables, especially when you start mm-hmm. to talk about how many different wind calls you can make on a long shot.
The rotation of the earth.
Everything. The Coriolis effect. There are
yes,
just
and,
almost
and if I can jump
innumerable.
In,
go ahead.
Brother, if I can jump in, do you know what we do in our systems is the data book. And when you first get into yes, it, yes. you're like, what is this data book? And you build a data book over an entire career, and that becomes yes. a reference on top of it. So go ahead, Ronnie.
Well, no, and then all that data you get, by the way, goes down to what? Your cold bore shot. You know what that's
yes.
Sorry, Ronnie.
It's a very new world for me, but it is the type of shooting that just brings me so much joy, because again, it's more than just running an AR or running a pistol. Mm-hmm. This is a process. This is a chess game against Mother Earth.
Wow.
Right?
Yes.
Well, for the first time, I was given the opportunity to come out to an extreme long range match. They put me behind a caliber I had never heard of. And in fact, I thought they were fucking with me, if I'm being honest. It was called the 375 Swiss P.
And when I've never heard of it, bro.
Neither have I. I don't know.
So it's like a necked up 338 is what
okay.
it is.
Okay, good.
So they put me behind that, and he said, this is a Swiss pea. And I thought he meant like, you know, like pee, like urine. And I looked at him, I was like, that's funny.
Yeah.
He was very serious about the 375. and he, you know, he was helping me understand my wind call. You know, calling wind is something that really comes from experience. You know, when you can call it at the shooter, at the midpoint, and at your target, seeing that through your optic is an experience thing and not something that you can do out of the gate. So he's helping me on my wind call. He's helping me dial my elevation. I was holding probably something like 30 minutes of elevation. I don't remember what it was, but he yeah. walked me on for back-to-back shots at 1833, my first time engaging over 600. I do compete in the tactical wow. games, and in the military we don't get the opportunity for that. So my first time engaging over 600, wow. one of these guys out here, civilian shooter, an American rifleman,
is walking me through putting a round on a steel plate at 1,833 meters.
Incredible.
And it was the most amazing thing I could have imagined. And it's a world that I am falling into face first, because again, there are an innumerable amount of variables that you can try to account for, but ultimately at the end of the day, all you can do is prepare so much mm-hmm. and it's a thinking man's game. And I love it. Totally. I'm way into it.
I love the Coriolis effect, because that really pisses off the flat earthers.
Oh, God, and the flat earth! Rob, did you see when my best piece of Instagram I've done ever was when the eclipse came, and I said, PPE is flat earth rated, because, you know, everybody would, and any of us had ever been in helicopters and done over the horizon inserts.
No kidding. Well, that's awesome too, because up until this conversation, I thought a Swiss pea was something that I got in the 90s at a brothel in Zurich.
You got to look it up. It's real. He was very serious about it. And it was actually, so Thunder Beast suppressors, you know, I'm not trying to call them out, but that was the round that they had chosen for a factory gun with one of their suppressors with factory ammunition. So we hit at 1833 consecutively, so twice, with factory gun, factory ammunition, and a suppressor on this rifle.
Holy crap, and the suppressor at that range.
Long shot.
Incredible.
Fantastic rifle. Weird caliber, but... Hey,
that's
They did the hard work. Shout out to the spotters out there.
The spotters do the work. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. And that goes back to, I got to sell a little merch here. It goes back to the basics.
Sell it, baby.
Take the shot.
Yeah, baby. Yes. Sell it, baby.
That's just a good motto for life, dude. Take the shot. Ask her out. Hit start. Let's do this.
Yeah, brother.
So, hey, Rudy, tell me about the show, where people can find it, where to look.
Okay, well, we got military, the proof is out there, Military Mysteries on History Proper on Monday nights, 10 Eastern, 9 Central, so on and so forth. But then you can get on the next day on History TV, the streaming, and you can catch it there. It's burning up the freaking airwaves. And you know what? When you get an email from the VP, a talent, saying the show's doing great, then you know what? It's a damn good freaking shot. And maybe Ronnie and I had to talk it on by freaking asking Rob O'Neill and talking to our people to get it out there. But we've talked that shot on, brother.
Take the shot. The proof is out there. Military Mysteries. I'm telling you, the show is dynamite. When I'm done, when the finale comes up, I'm watching the whole thing again. Again, I'm taking more notes because, I love history. This is all there. So great talking with you guys, Rudy Reyes and Ronnie Adkins. Awesome. Let's do this again when it wraps up. And love seeing you guys, man. Kick ass.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks, Rob. Hey, man. Thank you,
good
sir.
Seeing you. I mean, come on. Now, that's just fascinating. That just kind of blows my mind with certain things, like almost what you think is real. And then you don't, I mean, it might not be real. Maybe someone said something to someone else that I like how the proof is out there. Military Mysteries. It makes you do the research. You want to learn more about history, and then almost you want to learn what you were told and why. I mean, I thought it was cool because I always enjoy when there are conspiracy theories that are conspiracies until they're proven right or proven wrong and why. And I was not on the moon landing, but I was on a stealth helicopter going to Abbottabad, Pakistan. So just to be there and actually see it, but then wonder what people think. And how long did people know about it? Like, was that the final option? And someone whispered to President Obama, hey, we got this thing. I don't know. I was told. So anyway, stuff like that. But that interview is awesome, man. I really want to get those guys on again. They're very busy. So I consider that sort of a short interview. They're flying all over the place. They're obviously shooting guns further or farther. I don't know. They have better English than me, whatever. Shooting guns, filming stuff. And this is just, you got to go check it out, though. The History Channel, proof is out there. Military, it's just awesome. I'm going to rewatch a lot of them. I don't think I spent, I got to see them again just because, taking notes, but taking more notes and things like that. So I hope you enjoy this episode of the Operator Podcast. And remember that if you can remember that the proof is out there, you're never out of the fight.